teaches relationships and the way people interact like few people that I've ever heard.
Hi, I'm Tony Alessandra, and don't miss my show, People IQ, only on the Success Training Network.
How's your relationship with that boss or team leader? With your parents? With that guy or gal in the next office that seems so uncooperative? That's what I'd like you to evaluate in the next few minutes together. My name is Diana Boer. Our show is called Communicate with Confidence. Thanks for joining me in this third segment of our series on gender communication differences. Just to remind you once again, I want to emphasize that there's not a right or wrong way to communicate. Men are not superior communicators. Women are not superior communicators. They're just different. And awareness of those differences is the key to improving our interactions and our relationships on a day-to-day basis. Remember, too, that earlier comment that all the differences we're going to be talking about are a matter of degree. On any one particular issue, you may communicate in a style much more typical of the opposite gender. And that's understandable and very true. I've occasionally had people say, gender differences. There's no such thing. We're all people. We communicate differently, yes, but that's because of different personalities, not necessarily gender issues. Yet, when they really look at the research and consider thoughtfully their past relationships at work and at home, they typically change their minds very quickly. So, work for awareness. That's the key. Let's get into some of those differences here. Opinions. Take them or leave them. How do we use them differently between the two genders? Well, women tend to state facts that sound like opinions often, and men tend to often state opinions that sound like fact. Women often shop for opinions in their attempt to explore their own feelings and to come to their conclusions. If they need a lot of opinions, of course, they go to the opinion mall, better known as the ladies' restroom. Now, women may or may not make decisions based on those opinions offered by others, but they do ask for them. Men are different. When persuading their colleagues to come to decision, men tend to want to build consensus, whereas men tend to request opinions less often. They ask for and state their opinion generally as a matter of information rather than shopping for a response. When women ask men for their opinion and they don't do or make a decision based on what the man offered, that's okay. But to a man, he thinks he's wasted time. He's wasted time in giving that opinion. And men ask for opinions less often. As I said, when persuading their colleagues to come to a decision, men generally prefer dictating a solution rather than just wasting time in talking about a situation. They typically use closed versus open questions. For example, in a staff meeting, they might say, I'm planning to do X to solve that problem. Does anybody have a problem with that? A woman might walk out of that meeting thinking, gee, they just ran over me. I didn't have a chance to offer my opinion. And he thinks, I said this is what I'm going to do. Nobody spoke up. Therefore, everybody must have agreed. What's the result? Well, men think women waste their time and others shopping for those opinions if they don't use them. And women sometimes think that the male boss or the team leader runs over them and doesn't ask for their opinion or ignores it. So, what can we do about straightening out this crosstalk? Well, for women, they can accommodate a male style by making it clear and requesting an opinion that they intend only to evaluate that opinion and then come to their own conclusion. Another tip, they can determine whether building consensus or dictating a decision on a case-by-case basis is the best option. And then men can do some accommodating themselves. They can offer their opinions without expecting or obligating someone to act on those opinions. Men also can work to build consensus if they want buy-in from others on a decision, if they want others to feel that their input is valued. And that leads me to another difference, and that is directness or indirectness. Women's language in general tends to be indirect for the most part, discreet, tactful, but at times, on the downside, manipulative. Example, a woman might say, well, that approach is not exactly foreign to our consultants, meaning we're familiar with it. Another example, a woman might say to a customer, Mary may not be able and available to handle that research for you, meaning Mary doesn't want to handle that project for you. A female manager might say, Jerry, I have complete confidence in the way you deal with those clients. I trust you completely to make those kind of decisions. And she really means, I hope you'll quit bringing those headaches to me. Take care of it yourself. Now, men's language tends to be direct, powerful, but on the downside, it can be blunt and offensive. For example, a male manager might say, Tom blew that deal because of his stubborn refusal to negotiate. It's the point, but it's a little blunt. Or another example, a male manager might say, I will not approve that expense. It's totally unnecessary. Or, that's a half-baked idea if I ever heard one. Or, you're dead wrong. Now, granted, those are direct, but sometimes a little offensive. Let's talk about directives for a minute. Women tend to give fewer directives to staff people. They use more courtesy words, please and thank you and I would appreciate. Men generally give more directives than women, and they use fewer courtesy words. For example, a man might say, I don't like that display there. Move it. And a woman commenting in the same situation might say, I don't think I like that display there. Do you? What do you say we move it? Do you mind? This can be frustrating. The issue of misunderstood directives causes frustration for both genders. Men get frustrated when they can't tell if that female team leader or supervisor is stating an opinion or giving a directive. And then women get frustrated when a male subordinate doesn't comply with what they themselves think are clear directives. For example, a female manager might say to a staff person, do you think you can get this proposal ready to go out by Friday? I'd like to be persuasive to the client. And he's thinking of his schedule, and he says, yeah, I think I can have it ready. Friday rolls around. She walks in and says, well, is the proposal ready? And he says, no, it's not ready. I didn't have time to get to it. And she's thinking, I asked him to get to it. What? I told him I wanted to go out Friday. Why didn't he comply? You see, again, what she thought was a directive, he took as a maybe if you have time. The opposite is also true. Men sometimes give directives that they may or may not exactly mean, at least it sounds like a directive to the staff person listening. For example, a male manager might say to a female assistant, I want this contract hand-delivered. It's really important. Now, the assistant maybe can't get away during the day, so she changes her entire personal schedule after hours, runs the errand after work, hand-delivers the contract to the client just like she thought the boss told her to do. And the next morning, she comes into work, she mentions completing the mission, and the male manager says, oh, I didn't expect you to have to go to all that trouble and do it on your personal time. A courier would have been fine. You see, he was stating a preference, but to her, it sounded like a directive. So, how do we get together on this issue? Well, both sides, again, can do the accommodating. A woman can make sure that subordinates know when she's giving an opinion or making a request versus just stating a decision or stating a directive up front to be complied with. A male manager can do some accommodating. He can make sure that subordinates know they have a choice in a situation, whether they mean this as a preference or if this comment is a directive. So for a woman to accommodate a male style, she should use straightforward language if she wants to make sure that that message gets heard. Be direct and to the point so as not to dilute performance feedback to a subordinate. And men can do some accommodating too. They can use tact and show respect for the individual, even if they're emotionally upset, even when someone else's best interest is at heart. And in social settings, Men can use less directive language when just expressing a preference or an opinion. Let's move to another difference in the communication styles. Accomplishments. Let me tell you about one particular research study reported by Patty Hathaway in her book, Giving and Receiving Criticism. Several psychologists were to examine differences between how the sexes viewed their successes and failures. The participants were divided in two same-sex groups and were assigned certain tasks. And the task was to put together a puzzle. But the puzzles were rigged. It was impossible to put them together. So when the researchers asked the men why they couldn't complete the puzzle within a certain time period, they said, most common answer, something's wrong with the puzzle. Or, you didn't give us good directions. Or, there wasn't enough time. In other words, they considered the problem outside themselves. But the same scenario with a group of women. They also were given this puzzle to put together, and it was totally impossible to do. It was a rigged puzzle. And when the researchers asked them, say, you didn't beat the clock, you didn't get it under the time limit, what happened? The most common answers, women would say things like, well, I don't know, I guess I'm just not good at puzzles. Or, I guess I didn't listen well to the instructions. Or, puzzles are not my strong suit. In other words, they assumed that the fault lay with them, not with the puzzle. The interesting difference was that men tended to, in other words, externalize failure. It was somebody else's issue. And women tend to internalize failure. Now, the second part of that study was equally thought-provoking. Both groups were given a very simple puzzle, in which they were all successful. They all beat the time clock. And when the men were asked why they were able to put together the puzzle, most common answers, I'm good at puzzles. Women, on the other hand, were asked the same question. Hey, women, you did a great job on the puzzle. How did you do it so quickly? Their most common comment, I'm just lucky. Or, well, that was an easy puzzle. Or, they pointed to teammates. They did it. They're good at puzzles. In other words, men tend to, according to the research, internalize and take credit for success. Women tend to externalize their success, and they attribute it to the simple puzzle rather than their own ability. Now, a lot of research has been done on the issue of accomplishments and failure and how we deal with it. Other research by Simon's Market Research Bureau and Bright Enterprises confirmed these studies with over 11,000 adults. Let me give you a particular incident. I was talking with a financial services client, and a female broker asked her branch manager for some help with recommendations to give to an investor. The manager suggested an idea that would actually save the investor lots of tax dollars. So the female consultant goes back out to talk to the client. When she presented the idea, she also mentioned in her recommendation that it was her boss's idea. Now, the branch manager, a man, who was telling me the situation, says, you know, I have male brokers all the time. I give them the same advice. They go out to their clients, and they take credit for the idea. His conclusion, women tend to downplay their achievements. Now, that's not always such a noble thing to do. Sometimes we as women downplay achievements and accomplishments because we want to avoid jealousy among peers, and we feel that that maybe generates some distance or difficulty in a relationship. And because we as women enjoy working for consensus and having camaraderie and being liked, we often share the credit with other members. We don't want to make them feel jealous of accomplishments. So, net results, sometimes women's skills are underestimated and their achievements go unnoticed. Men tend to be better at announcing their achievements so that they do gain respect and they earn admiration from their colleagues. They send on emails. They pass on favorable comments from customers and peers to their boss. They generally present themselves well. As a result, a man's skill often gets noticed. He gets recognition and reward. Now, if you even think about this success-failure idea, the genders even have different definitions of teamwork. For example, men understand hierarchies. They grew up playing sports, football, basketball. You know, the football team has a quarterback. He calls the plays. In the military, the sergeant gives the orders. People at higher rank get greater glory. But to women, Teamwork means something totally different. Teamwork for women means that everyone gets equal treatment. If anybody's raised to a higher level of importance or status, whether it's because of accomplishment or not, sometimes other women don't think it's fair. It goes against their feeling of team spirit. So, let me give you some suggestions on this issue about accomplishments and failures. For women, you can find ways to display your skills and your achievements so they do win notice and reward in the workplace. For men, continue to gain respect for your accomplishments. You deserve that. Men can also recognize and look for accomplishments in women who may not be so forthcoming with what they've accomplished and be willing to reward those. Well, let's get into another difference. The difference between showing emotion and affection. Women are often accused of being more emotional. My response to that is, well, it depends. It depends on which kind of expression of emotion you're talking about. Tears or anger. Women do cry more often. But men tend to raise their voices more often. Both of those outpourings of emotion can be signs of upset, tension, stress, anger. Women generally also show affection and emotion more openly. They compliment people. They express pleasure. When they feel good, they let you know it. They laugh, they cry much more often than men. They also apologize more readily and easily. They don't necessarily see an argument as a contest, and they can bear the burden of being wrong. In fact, you've noticed that I talk with my hands. At a recent event, I was standing in a buffet line, or near a buffet line. I was talking and gesturing and moving, and the line was passing along behind me, and all of a sudden I swung my arm, and I bumped into a woman passing down through the buffet line holding her plate and tea. Spilled tea all over her, ruined her suit, and she turned around and said to me, "Oh, I'm so sorry, my fault." Not true. I was the one gesturing. I was the one that spilled her tea. And she was apologizing to me. That's typical of our gender. We find it rather easy to apologize. But on the downside, we don't like to forgive. We as women find forgiving very difficult. In fact, if you've ever argued with a woman, you know that women often bring up past wrongs. If you're a woman, you probably remember an incident back in third grade when somebody did you wrong and you're still upset about it. In fact, you'd probably like to talk to that person again. See, women see relationships as fluid and evolving. They accuse more and they hold grudges longer, but they forgive easily. They apologize easy. Women are often frustrated and more responsive when they feel liked, loved, accepted, and approved. Again, men are different here. They tend to show emotion and affection less directly through action. For example, maybe you've done something that's worthy of praise or recognition. Instead of complimenting you on that in a staff meeting, they may just go get you a raise. They tend to use sarcasm and teasing, often to show liking. They laugh or they cry less often than women. And when arguing, men tend to stick to the problem at hand, the issue at hand. They accuse less. They hold far fewer grudges. In fact, two men can chew each other out in a meeting and then go out and play golf together 3 days later. So they're much better at forgiving than women. But they apologize less often. And with great difficulty. You see, they see a disagreement as a contest, and they insist on being right, on winning. My husband used to say, "I'm never wrong. I was mildly confused once, but never wrong." Men are motivated and more responsive when they feel admired, when they feel needed, when they feel appreciated. So, how do the two genders get together here? Well, let's talk about accommodation. How do you accommodate the other gender, get what you want, but still accommodate their style? Well, for women, they can stick to the issues at hand when they're arguing to solve a current problem. They could forgive more and forgive more often. And women should not try to nag or shame a man into showing emotion or affection if that's not his natural inclination. Women could express appreciation frequently to men for their work and their results. But let's talk about men for a moment. Men can also accommodate the female's communication style while still getting what they want. Men could consider past issues and events when they're trying to understand the current problem. In other words, those past events are what created sometimes the current difficulty, and they're not always, quote, off the subject. They could apologize more, and apologize more directly, not necessarily just through action, but also with the words. Men can also accommodate or show affection more openly through direct compliments and more emotional intonation in their words. Let's talk about a different difference. Humor. Actually, there are two different purposes and often two very different reactions to humor from the genders. A teacher in a local high school was telling me about their male principal who had called in some parents for a conference after they'd caught their son selling drugs. Now, understandably, the parents were devastated. This was a very affluent neighborhood. It was not the typical parent-teacher conference. The male principal was trying to lessen the tension, and at the end of their discussion, he made this wisecrack. He said, "Well, obviously your son has great sales ability. We just need to find him a better product." Now, the father smiled at that comment. But the mother was highly offended. She thought the principal was making light of a very serious situation. Even in the most serious of circumstances, men use humor to break tension and to lessen embarrassment, their own and the other person's. We're just beginning to see some of those issues and those uses of humor come to surface after 9/11 attacks. And during the Iraqi war, we saw signs over Foxhole that said, "Holiday Inn Resort, maximum occupancy 14. In case of emergency, 114. Even in those most serious circumstances, men are using humor to lighten the situation, to lighten the tension. When women use humor, they more often tell self-deprecating stories on themselves. Put-downs directed toward them or others, even in jest, make women feel uncomfortable. Rather than self-effacing humor, men tend to direct their humor outward, toward others. For example, a man might say, "Where did you get that tie, Goodwill?" Now, translated, that means, "I like the tie." A man might say to someone he likes or dislikes, "What a pile of junk you're driving." Translated, that means, "Nice car, you must be making big bucks." You see, men use humor to put down or to tease people they like or they don't like. It just doesn't really make any difference. Women and men also have a different way of listening to each other. Let's talk about airtime for a minute. For example, women tend to talk more in private, and men tend to talk more in a public, open situation. Women hold the floor for shorter periods of time. Men's contributions tend to last longer. Women tend to carry on conversation, dialogue, back and forth in shorter spurts. Men tend to speak longer, and they report facts and opinions. Now, when their body language is different as well. When women listen, they tend to lean forward. They tend to nod and smile often. They're not necessarily saying, "I agree with you." They're saying, "I follow you. I understand." For example, at a cocktail party, a woman might be standing there looking, nodding, smiling, and thinking all along, "You're the most boring person I've talked to in a long time. I wish I could escape this conversation." Now, men listen differently. When they listen, they often lean back, and they don't necessarily show any kind of facial expression. They may not feel a need to comment or acknowledge a comment that's made to them. For example, this may sound familiar around your home. The man is standing there watching TV, flipping through the channels. His wife is talking to him in the background, and she says, "Do you hear me?" And he says, "I heard you, I heard you, I heard you, every word you said," as he flips through the channels. He senses no need to acknowledge. It's just a difference in the listening styles. Let's talk about another difference. Meta messages. For example, a male colleague says, "I read your proposal." Long silence. The female looks up and says, "You don't think it's going to work?" Now, how did she get from "I read your proposal" to "you don't think it's going to work"? That's a meta message. The term meta-message was coined by Dr. Gerard Nuremberg many years ago. It means, basically, that the message is not just the words. It's the words, the tone of voice, the action, the body language, the context, our relationship. All of that goes together for a woman to formulate one message that she hears. Women are more attuned to those nuances of body language and tone and volume and past conversations. On the other hand, men tend to be less aware of meta messages. They tend to focus on the words. The message is the words. That's why you hear a lot of conversation that sounds like this, maybe, at your house. She says, "Why are you so upset after we said so-and-so?" And he looks at her and he says, "Look, all I said was blah, blah, blah." And she's saying, "No, but after what you said to me yesterday and the way you were yelling, I thought..." And he says, "Look, all I said was blah, blah, blah." You see, he's operating on the words as the message. She's taking in the whole tone of voice, volume, language, context, past comments to formulate the message. When women feel stress in a relationship, they tend to probe. And there's a lot of talk about talk. Let's talk about it. When a man feels stress in a relationship, he tends to withdraw, thinking, after a while, she'll get over it. The tension will reside, and we can resume where we were. A difference in how we process all the stimuli that comes to us to formulate a message. So, let's wrap up here. How do we reconnect our conversational crosswires as men and women and close this gender communication gap? Well, we learn to play both positions, infield and outfield, offense and defense. We take both viewpoints and understand both emotional drivers that dictate the conversation and the communication style we use. As I've said from the beginning of this three-part series, neither style, the man's or the woman's, neither style is right or wrong. It's not a matter of helping the other person see where they're wrong and you're right. The goal is just not to clash because of these style differences. It's just a different way. Awareness of these differences can mean the difference between a marriage or a divorce, a promotion or a termination, a great learning experience or a disaster, a supportive or a stifling work environment, a long-term customer relationship or a short-term acquaintance. Understanding the difference in communication styles between men and women will improve your success ratio in sales methods, management, or marriage. In short, you want to understand the opposite gender before you're too old to be interested in them. This is Diana Boer, encouraging you to communicate with confidence.